Everybody, welcome to the back room. I'm Andy Ostroy. We have back with us again S.E. Cupp. She's going to talk about her opinion piece in the Daily News this week about 2024 presidential election. But first, thank you for tuning in today. We appreciate you listening, and we'd love to hear your comments. So email us at backroomandy@gmail.com and or post on our social media, and we'll read some feedback next time. And if you like the podcast, please follow or subscribe and rate and review, and to be notified every time we post a new episode. So here's some feedback we received this week on our conversation with actor Jane Lynch. Vanessa Fagan writes, I love Jane Lynch, such a witty and bright woman. Taffy Fantasia, such a great conversation. I learned so much about her career. On our conversation with Obama White House photographer Pete Souza, Paul Gunluck writes, I just listened to the entire podcast and it was fascinating. I have seen a lot of Mr. Souza's discussions and conversations and always find them interesting and still learned a lot today. And in what might be the most biased piece of mail we've ever gotten, Braden Retz writes, as the Oscars wrap up tonight, it seems fitting to give praise for best guest on the back room. And the award goes to Elmo, as voiced by Jen Hammoud. Brilliant, inspired performance. Had everyone in my car from age 9 to 50 experience a wide range of emotions, from shock and awe to delight and utterly unbridled amusement. How much did you pay, Braden, to say that, Jen Hammoud? And you must answer as Elmo. You must answer as Elmo.
Andy, I'm embarrassed to tell you. La 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 la, la 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 la, too much money.
God, what has happened to the back room? Our integrity is shot. It's completely shot. Now I have to start paying my friends to send fan mail.
Wait, that's
how wonderful I am too.
That's not what you're already doing?
Yes. But I'm just going to pretend it's a new strategy. All right. A lot of news to discuss this week. Donald Trump. Let's go to the clip.
Trump and I have a very different value set of it, and obvious already.
Two nights ago, we all heard Crooked Joe's angry, dark, hate-filled rant. Didn't it bring us together? Emerge the order. Bring the country together. I'm going to bring it together.
We all know Donald Trump sees a different America. An American story of resentment, revenge, and retribution. That's not me. That's not you.
Now watch these criminals back there, the press. Look at them. Look at how many of them. That's a lot of people. That's a lot of people.
Yesterday, he was hosting at his club, Viktor Orban, who says he doesn't think democracy works. Call him a fantastic leader.
I had dinner last night with a great gentleman from Hungary, Prime Minister of Hungary, Viktor Orban. Very, very tough. Some people don't like him because he's very tough.
Instead of celebrating the contribution of immigrants to our country, to our economy and our communities, Donald Trump calls them vermin, poisoning the blood of America. No one should ever doubt where my heart is.
I will end the agony of our people, the plunder of our cities, the sacking of our towns, the violation of our citizens, and the conquest of our country. They're conquering our country. These people are conquering our country. They're horrible people.
Well, voters, if you haven't yet understood the contrast between Joe Biden and Donald Trump, that clip pretty much sums it up. There you have the literal definition of good versus evil. So let's just start with the evil. Shall we? The mocking of somebody who stutters. Now, we've seen this before from Donald Trump when he mocked the handicapped reporter years ago. And what's worse is the people who are in the audience at the rallies laughing and cheering because it's funny, right? It's funny to make fun of disabled people. That's really not only what we want our kids to do, but of course, our president should do it, right? This is a value that we should all grab onto, right? Mocking disabled people. And then, you know, he has this fascination with strongmen. So Orban, you know, he's a great gentleman. And people love him because he's very, very tough. Some people don't like him, Trump says. Some people don't like Orban because he's tough. Now, I would hazard to say that most people don't like Orban because he's a fucking dictator. And he's cruel. and he's oppressive, just like Trump's other pals, Kim Jong-un and Putin and MBS. And, you know, this is something that we've seen from the get-go with Trump, because that's what he, that's how he sees himself as a strong man.
Well, aspires to be.
Yeah, well, he wants to be. But the truth is, and I really want to coin a new phrase, you know, Trump is a weak man. He's not a strong man. He's a weak man. He's a weak man who looks up to strong men because he's a weak man, because he wants to be strong. But he is a coward. He's been a coward since he hid behind Fred's rich coattails during Vietnam and got his 5 bone spurs deferments and ran from Vietnam when real strong men actually suited up and served their country. Donald Trump actually years later said that he served his country too, because being a slut sexually was his own personal Vietnam. It was so dangerous back then to be a slut that it was like his own personal Vietnam.
Did he say that?
He actually said that.
He did.
That's news to me. Wow. Put him a whole new category in my brain.
So he compared himself as a New York slut to the brave men and women who suited up to serve their country.
I don't think he used that word, but he did say that.
I'm using it. And then just, you know, the continued fear-mongering, the rhetoric about immigrants. Like, come on, MAGAs. Like, how stupid can you be? 4 years ago, it was the caravans and the MS-13 gangs, and we saw neither of those. And now we're seeing the people who are, you know, the sacking of our towns. Really? Can we pull up any news footage of sacking of our towns or the conquering of our country? How is our country being conquered?
You're clearly not watching OAN. You're too hung up with your CNN and the libtard media.
I agree with you on this, man. OAN is not on my favorite channels list.
There you go.
Not even on my channels list. And it's like deja vu all over again, right? So then you have the good. You have the man who has a heart, the man who has a soul, the man who embraces people with disability, the man who is leading us through the greatest economic recovery in decades. The economy is on fire. The person who wants to give better health care, the person who cares about education, the person who cares about climate, the person who gets upset about mass shootings. I could go on and on and on. Yet these two people are either neck and neck, or if you believe some polls, Trump is ahead. So therein lies the inherent situation, which is problematic right now. It's what should be, isn't, if you believe the polls.
I mean, the issue is the same as it was in 2020 and 2016, that the Democrat has to get millions more in popular vote. So even though people like to say there's more of us than them, that's true, but we need an extra quantity of us over them. And it'll come down, as we know, to 3 to 5 states. And that's it. Georgia, Arizona, we know all the states. And clearly, which is good, Biden is going into Wisconsin and is opening up 42 offices, which is absolutely needed. And they're obviously going back to Michigan over and over again, because these are where it matters. And nothing else really matters except for those 5 states.
Yeah. Well, to your point, and this is what's interesting. If you analyze those states, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, Georgia, Arizona, if Biden keeps Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan, but loses Georgia and Arizona, which were the two closest contests in 2020, Biden still wins. If Biden were to lose, say, Wisconsin, Trump wins. So to your point, which is why they're focusing so heavily on Wisconsin, I don't think Trump will win Michigan. I don't think Trump will win Pennsylvania. So the next thing I want to talk about, which factors into all of this, is what I keep saying is that there's, you know, 8 months left and a shit ton is going to happen. And a shit ton is already happening. Just as we were getting ready to begin taping this morning, news broke out of Georgia that the judge issued his ruling in Fulton County DA Fannie Willis's disqualification in her case. And what he ruled was that either she has to fold up shop and quit and take all her staff with her, and basically there's a new, you know, prosecutorial team that takes over, if that were even able to happen, or she fires her lover and the...
Wade.
Yeah, the...
Nathan Wade.
The lead prosecutor, Nathan Wade. Obviously, that's a softball choice. We know what she's going to do. It's what she should do. There's a lot of mistakes that were made from the get-go by her in terms of judgment. And the judge pointed all that out. He said, look, there's just not enough evidence here to conclude that there is a direct conflict of interest. But the appearance of impropriety is rather large. And so it is a huge win for Fannie Willis, no doubt. It is a huge win for all the people like us who want to see this prosecution move forward and have him be convicted. The evidence is overwhelming. It's most likely he will be convicted. But it also gives Donald Trump a win that his lawyers filed this motion to have her disqualified in January. So 2 months have been lost. But we know what he's going to be out there saying. This gives him the fuel, you know, gives him what to say. This is what he's going to be talking about.
It's true. I mean, there's no getting around that. But the most important thing, as you mentioned, is that Fannie Willis gets to stay. Mm-hmm. She's the talent. And I'm looking forward to seeing how the trial can move forward.
Yeah.
I'm pessimistic that this will happen fast. I see all of these court cases slipping away before the election. I mean, we don't know, but each time there's another delay and another delay, Donald Trump has a little win.
That's true. I mean, I believe in the judicial system. I've said that over and over again. I am starting to feel that the system is giving him an inordinately large amount, an unusual amount of deference in his quest to delay. I think it's partly out of fear. It's partly out of politics. But I'm not sure what it means at the end of the day. Like, who really needs a conviction to make their decision not to vote for Trump? If you're waiting for a conviction, then you know what? You're a MAGA, in my opinion. You're a half MAGA. You know what I mean?
I think there are two reasons it matters. First, objectively speaking, the electorate should have these convictions or exonerations before the election.
Sure. Voters deserve that.
And second, more importantly, almost than that, he could win. I think it's pretty clear he could be president. And if he is, everything that isn't prosecuted before he becomes president is gone.
Yes, I agree with part of that. But I'll get back to my point that if he's going to win, he's going to win regardless of whether he's convicted or not. That's a fucked up thing that man would win again. And that means that a good chunk of this country doesn't give a flying fuck about what he's done and whether he's convicted for it.
It doesn't need to be a good chunk. It needs to be 77,000 people in 5 states.
Yeah, well, I understand the math. I'm just saying that I don't know anymore if we're all getting ourselves in a snit here over something that really doesn't matter.
Well, it's tangible, right? I mean, people, that's how they live their lives. They're, you know, they hold on to things that are tangible. And if you just say, well, you know, it doesn't matter anymore. Okay, now what are we going to do?
Sure. No, look, there are people who have said, you know, well, if he's convicted, then I can't vote for him. But I don't trust those people.
You shouldn't.
Because do they really need a conviction? Because to me, that means they have no conviction. If you, like, I'll vote for Trump, but if he's convicted of a crime, like, really? You'd vote for Trump, like, if there were no trials this year? Like, he's your guy? You watch him mocking disabled people? You watch him talking about being a dictator? You watch him talking about letting Putin march through Europe and NATO can go fuck itself? Like, none of that bothers you?
Well, God came down, and he, white God, took his hand, put it on Trump's head and said, you are the anointed one. Mm-hmm. And you can't argue with that. So that's what, 25% of his base.
Yeah. Look,
so then just ignore them and just move along. And
I don't,
you know,
profess to have a crystal ball. So I have no idea what's going to happen. But my personal feeling is that I'm really starting to feel like he's in so much shit that the people who matter are the ones who are able to see it. Not the people in the middle, the people who are able to see the shit. whether you're on the left, the right, or in the middle. And those people, if they're blind, they're going to vote for him. And if they're able to see it, they won't. My question is, do we need a completed trial with a verdict for them to get to that point in November? I don't know. It's all just opinion. Other things that happened this week in the New York hush money case, DA Alvin Bragg is requesting a 30-day delay. Trump wants a 90-day delay because somehow evidence that was supposed to be given wasn't given, but it was given, but it wasn't given. Like, I've watched countless minutes of analysis, and nobody seems to know who's at real fault here. Somebody fucked up somewhere.
Merrick Garland.
That's true. Merrick Garland did fuck up. I was defending him for a long time, but he fucked up. Judge Aileen Cannon down in Florida, Trump appointee, crony, she denied his motion to dismiss the classified documents case, or she dismissed one of the motions. Basically, she kicked the can down the curb. She ruled without prejudice. It could come back. But wasn't a win for Trump.
She still hasn't set a trial date. It's that trial is definitely not happening before the election. I think we could say that.
Well,
oh, come on.
I don't know. Starting a trial and finishing a trial are two different things. We have 8 months ahead of us. So turning to the election, you know, the other thing, too, is we're seeing people like Colorado Congressman Ken Buck. He dropped out. Why did he drop out? Because he said, this shit's crazy. He said, y'all, I've been around for a long time, and these motherfuckers are insane.
And he knows crazy.
He knows crazy.
He does.
But he's like, this shit's too crazy, even for me. So then you got him. You got Patrick McHenry from North Carolina. You have the things Chip Roy recently said. Like, what the fuck is up with you guys? Like, when Chip Roy starts to tell you you're crazy.
So true.
So this party, like, they were supposed to win the House by 40 to 60 seats. They won by about four. Now I think they have like a one vote majority or some crazy thing like that because everybody's dropping out or getting kicked out, like George Santos.
He's running again.
He's, well, maybe. I've actually been having some fun back and forth texts with NASA Woomer. Hey, NASA. He's crazy. But this is a party that, in my estimation, cannot hold the House in November. It's just not going to happen. It's a fucking shit show.
They might hold the Senate, but they might not hold the House.
They could. I mean, you know, if you look at the map, they could take the Senate. I'm not convinced they will. I'm not convinced they're going to take anything because they are fucked up. They're fucked up. They stand for nothing. They offer voters nothing.
I want to live where you live in my head. Yeah. That makes me happy.
Oh, you don't want to be in my head.
Gerrymandered.
My head is a very strange place, Jen. All sorts of weird.
Your head is outside the world of gerrymandering.
My head.
Exactly.
If one were to x-ray my head, they'd find really bad things. I want to get back to the 24 election for a second. Let's play this clip.
Trump talking about retribution.
Retribution and going after people is disrespect of our military.
The military people that he's disgraced.
91.
Criminal felonies.
4 different indictments.
He mishandled classified documents.
Taking documents.
Now his desire to do away with NATO.
Donald Trump talks about abandoning Ukraine.
He said he'll be a dictator on day one.
If he's going to be a dictator on day one, he's going to be a dictator, period.
That kind of stuff scares me.
Absolutely scares me.
The second Trump term would be worse than the first.
Second term for Trump
would be far more extreme.
It is dangerous, outright dangerous.
I cannot support Donald Trump again.
I'd never vote for him again.
He'll never get my vote, ever, ever.
That's a great new ad from Republican Voters Against Trump. That's Sarah Longwell's group. And they're going to be spending $50 million to stop Trump through a series of those homemade testimonial videos of voters who backed him in the past, but say they can no longer support him in 2024. I always say the squeaky wheel gets the grease. These people are not the squeaky wheel. But I think there's a lot more people like these folks who don't make the news all the time, who aren't out there with their bullhorns, that are going to be a key factor in his defeat this November. So I think these are going to be really effective ads. That ad is incredibly effective.
Let's hope so.
All right, let's get to our winners and losers.
I'm just Ken. Anywhere else, I'd be a 10. My winner, Ryan Gosling, for his male fragility performance at the 2024 Oscars. My loser, predatory online groups on Telegram and Discord who coerce children into degrading and violent self-harm acts and then boast about it.
So wait, are you just like sucking up to Braden again? Like, are you?
I love sir.
Is this just to get another letter from Braden?
It's
Ritz
not just Braden. It's saying, her kids. They saying, think I'm cool. Nobody thinks I'm cool. I'm addicted to it.
I think you're cool.
Oh, thank you.
I'm going to go with my loser first, and I'm going to go with Merrick Garland. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Southern District, just now, 15 days before the Manhattan DA is about to start a trial, is going to turn over 31,000 pages. Like, what have they been doing for the last year with those documents? My winner is Olivia Rodrigo, who I adore, and she handed out emergency contraceptives at her concert in Missouri, where abortion is banned.
My winner, Representatives Eric Swalwell, Ted Lieu, Adam Schiff, and others, who brilliantly exposed Special Counsel Robert Hur's partisan bias in his Biden classified documents investigation and subsequent report to Congress. My loser, Robert Hur, who in his report diagnosed Biden as a, quote, elderly man with a poor memory. And he was exposed this week as a partisan hack when Democrats reminded him that the transcript from his own report said Biden demonstrated a, quote, photographic memory, and that he also clearly remembered the date of his son Beau's death. All right, that brings us to the weekly rant. I think I finally figured out Donald Trump. I feel like I have unlocked the secret to his every decision, his every move, the one thing that drives him more than anything. And that's his need to be a contrarian, the lone wolf, Mr. I Alone. Trump's psychotic pathology dictates that he must say up when everyone else says down, black when everyone says white, yes when everyone says no, and no when everyone says yes. Not because he believes up or black or yes or no is correct, logical, or part of any core value he has. It's simply because he cannot be part of a team. He does not know how to share, whether it's a position, a stage, and certainly not credit. Collaboration is not a word in his vocabulary, nor is teamwork and selflessness part of his DNA. Trump has an insatiable craving and need to always be the center of attention, to always be the one who's right, the one who knows more about anything and everything than anyone, no matter how outlandish his positions or buffoonish his behavior. For example, if he feels it would get him more attention, he would literally say cancer is good, or that the N-word is acceptable, or that Hitler was right in annihilating 6 million Jews, because he'd be publicly alone in those positions, and that makes him feel best, because to him, no one's smarter than him. So he doesn't care if he's the only one in the world to think and say something. In fact, that's what he lives for, because it gets him attention. And he does not care about the fallout over his outrageous statements and behavior, nor does he have the emotional capacity to grasp the gravity of them, because to Trump, negative reinforcement, attention of any kind, is a win. It feeds his diseased id in a way the rest of us cannot comprehend. After 10 years on the political stage, we still have no idea who Trump really is, what he truly believes, which is why we see him frequently demanding capitulation of a particular issue by congressional Republicans, only to quickly reverse course and throw them under the proverbial bus when they've given him exactly what he wants. Because he just likes to be the boss, likes to get people to succumb to his every pathological whim, and the issues, the positions, are just props to make others look foolish and garner him more attention. And all of this equates to chaos. Chaos, which is the blood that runs through his veins. It's what keeps him alive and makes him happiest. All right, let's bring out S.E. Cupp. She is a CNN political commentator and most recently host of CNN's S.E. Cupp Unfiltered. Before joining CNN, she co-hosted MSNBC's The Cycle. She's a nationally syndicated political columnist, culture critic, author, and consultant who regularly writes for the New York Daily News, Glamour, and CNN.com. She was previously a consultant for Apple TV's The Morning Show, starring Jennifer Aniston, Reese Witherspoon, and Steve Carell, and HBO's hit series, The Newsroom. S.E., welcome back into the back room.
Thanks for having me back into the back room.
So you wrote an article this week, an opinion piece called Standard Bearers Have Two Different Standards. Biden and Trump are not treated the same. And my takeaway from your piece was that the normalization of Trump and his insane behavior is okay. And like if Biden sneezes, like that is like the biggest crime in the world. So tell us what was the motivation for the piece and what do you think it means in the bigger picture in terms of the remaining 8 months and how this election and these two candidates who are now the presumptive nominees, how they're going to be treated by the press and everybody else.
Yeah. And I always like to say thanks for reading my writing. I appreciate that. Well, it was the day of the delegate, you know, clinching, right? When both of these guys were presumed to clinch their delegates. And I was thinking, okay, so now we're going forward. Who has the advantage? And I, you know, I was going through in my mind the advantages that Biden has. He has a money advantage. Certainly, he's not facing 91 criminal indictments. That's an advantage. Certainly frees up his schedule, at least. But I was then struck by this idea that their voters are very different. And when we talk about holding these two guys at different standards, I'm talking about their own voters. That's important. I'm not saying the media's, you know, got double standards or or a political party. I'm talking about their voters. So if you look at Trump, he has conditioned his voters to love everything he does, even the worst of it, right? They don't care that he is facing 91 criminal charges. This is how low his bar is. They don't care that he is a rapist, as a judge said he was. They don't care that he lies. They don't care that he changes his mind on policy or can't explain policy. They're not there for the policy. They don't mind that he stutters and stammers and doesn't make sense and is clearly missing a step. The bar is very low for Trump, but said by his voters. As you were saying, Biden's voters have a very high bar for him. You know, they mind that he looks like he's missed a step. 50% of Democrats are concerned about Biden's age. They mind when he has a policy gaffe or a rhetorical gaffe, when he says illegal, for example. They correct him and demand an apology. And of course, being a nice guy, he gives them one. When he, you know, has policies they don't like on Israel, for example, they tell him, we might sit home this election, do better, be better. So they're holding him to a very high standard. Now, that is correct. I don't want, you know, to devolve to where Trump's voters are. But that definitely gives Trump an advantage.
Sure. Huge.
Because it's not just loyalty. It's Trump's job from now till November is to try and win new voters. He's not actively looking to do that. Biden's job is to keep his own voters. And we've seen that constituencies long held by Democrats, from Black voters to Hispanic voters to young voters, are leaving. So he has a much harder job to keep his own voters. And then he'll probably have to get some more on top of it. So it's not a symmetrical problem that these two have going, you know, going to November. They have very different challenges set forth by their own voters.
No, and I'll even take it a step further and say it's not that his voters don't mind that stuff. They like it.
They love it.
They love when he mocks disabled people. Last weekend, he mocked Biden stuttering, literally like doing a stuttering person, and they're laughing. He has so dumbed down his part of America. And look, the man said it in 2015, I could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and I won't lose any support. And guess what? He was right.
He's right.
Now he's taken that a step further and says, not only can I shoot somebody, but I should not be arrested and prosecuted for it. Like, that's Trump 2.0.
Exactly,
but he knew his audience. And so the question I always come back to is, why and how did he know his audience so well? And what is it about them that he knows so well? When I try to answer that question, it's just racism, period. He knows they are white nationalists. They hate progress in the minority communities, gay communities. They don't want women anywhere. But in, I mean, you see Katie Britt, she's in the kitchen given the rebuttal.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
That's where they want women, in the kitchens.
It really surprised me, too. And the shock of 2016 was not just of all the 20,000 Republican candidates we had to choose from that this guy was chosen, but that he got so many Republican voters, Republican lawmakers, mm-hmm. Republican standard bearers to completely jettison not just conservatism, but and policies that they had long appreciated, but every norm that had been, mm-hmm. you know, orthodoxy for a century. So he got all of these people, many of whom I knew, right, in Congress or in media on the right, to suddenly not care that he's mocking children, disabled journalists, a prisoner of war. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the part that shocked me, that so many people weren't just willing to overlook it, but then came to embrace that about him, defend it, and then want more of it.
Yeah, I'm sure you've seen the clips, too, of his followers at rallies going, yeah, maybe it's time for a dictatorship. Maybe that's what America needs. And you know these people and their fathers and grandfathers served in the military because it's the
right.
working class and lower middle classes that tend to be the ones that end up going to the military, not children of the affluent. And so it's like, do you understand what you even fought for? What your father and grandfather fought for? Like, fascism is something we died fighting to kill off. And it's so astounding to me how these people have just abdicated every single core value. And even more so, when I'm done being astounded with that, then I go, for Trump? Like, of all people?
Yeah. No? Mm-hmm.
But Trump? He hates the working class. Yet they are out there saying, you know, he's one of us. How did that happen?
I mean, that's the trick he pulled off, too, because he managed to convince people he was anti-establishment when he was 100% part of the establishment. He was billionaire, real estate guy, mogul, media mogul. You know, he was in every establishment. But he convinced them that he wasn't because he had never been in political office, although he had flip-flopped all of his life in politics. That didn't matter either. But yeah, it's not, I mean, I was initially very offended that he got Republicans to stop caring about, like, tariffs and anti-protectionism, these sort of, like, you know, serious, high-minded, principled things. Well, forget that now. It's he convinced people to stop caring about America and what America is and has always been and should stand for. These were people who 7 years ago were like the patriot porn, you know, lovers who were, you know, loving the military can do no wrong, draping themselves in American flags, American Eagle taxidermy, right? Like, that's who these people were right before Trump. And now it's these people who are like, fuck democracy, insurrection was good, overturn this election, fuck the military, fuck the intelligence officers, fuck the generals, like, that's these people.
Right.
He's completely flipped.
Right.
And it's a willful ignorance because a lot of them do know better. Like I said, these people were on the complete opposite side of this not long ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in service of this cult leader. And the only way you could explain it, Andy, and we've talked about this many times, is that it's a cult.
Mm-hmm.
You can't explain it any other way other than the cult leader has this trance over people and leads them to places they would never normally go and mm-hmm. can't even justify or explain. All they can do is repeat what he says. And if you think of it that way, it makes perfect sense. But in the context of an election, you've got a Democratic Party running against a cult.
Mm-hmm.
The cult's very powerful. Mm-hmm. It's not a fringe cult. It's a mainstream cult.
Sure.
It's real powerful.
And it's infiltrated the courts, too.
Well, it's already in Congress.
It
could infiltrate the courts. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it already has mm-hmm. in some places. I mean, it's really, really scary.
Well, when you look at the case that Aileen Cannon is presiding over, when you look at some of the decisions from the Supreme Court, when you now, like, our antenna is up with the Georgia case, watching that carefully. I mean, wouldn't shock me if Fannie Willis is disqualified. And as you know, that might mean a death knell for that case if she's disqualified.
Yeah.
You know, and so, yeah. So in your piece, because we are in an election year and we now do have two clear nominees, and it's going to be a really ugly race, but you comprehensively list the strengths and the weaknesses of the candidates themselves.
Well, yeah. So Biden has a lot of strengths. Some are strengths that Democrats are sort of willing to be true. You know, Democrats close to Biden insist he's healthy and great. And listen, the American people don't see that. They don't agree. And Biden will have to work really hard till November to sort of shrug that off. And I'm not sure he can. Democrats close to Biden will also insist the economy's good. Americans don't agree with that yet. The good news there is there's time. He might be able to change some minds on that. But that's both a messaging problem for Biden and a policy problem for Biden. Mm-hmm. He is winning the money wars significantly. And that's not just because he's outraising Trump. He is. But Trump is also bleeding money in legal fees and fines and all those court cases. Biden's got some issues that are to his advantage. Abortion and reproductive rights, right? I mean, Republicans seem hell-bent on ceding that issue to Democrats and turning off every moderate and independent in the process. That's a problem for Republicans. Democrats are also hoping the democracy argument is as winning for them as it was in the midterms. That's tougher in a bad economy. You know, I can sit here in my Connecticut town in my home studio where we don't have an opioid crisis, I don't have a migrant crisis, and I can talk about how important democracy is, right?
Exactly.
If you haven't gotten a raise in 5 years, if you can't buy a house, you can't buy a car, you can't afford gas, you can't afford groceries, give a fuck about democracy. You're really worried about your pocketbook, your wallet. So that's tough, but you know, that can definitely appeal to some moderates and independents too. He's got a disadvantage on immigration as an issue, even though Republicans are craven about using it and not solving it. Most Americans fault Democratic policies for this migrant crisis and a failure of Biden's policies. So he's going to have to, that's a policy problem. And I was talking to one Democratic operative who wouldn't say this on camera, but she said it to me off camera, that he has bad facts when it comes to the border. And it's really hard to message against bad facts. So those are sort of the contours of Biden's pros and cons going forward. And for Trump, all the negatives you and I would list, right? The court cases, the money, all the things endemic to why Trump is so gross are all winning for him inside his voting base.
Right.
So it's really hard to do the horse race when it comes to Trump, because things you typically consider a disadvantage, A, he doesn't care about. For example, winning new voters. He doesn't care to. He was bragging about kicking Nikki Haley and all her voters out of MAGA. That is the opposite of a good election strategy. He doesn't care about that stuff. And also, it doesn't matter to his voters.
What do you think about those voters? You know, I watch way too much analysis and, you know, the expression, oh, they're going to come home to Trump eventually. Like, I don't.
Nikki voters?
Yeah. I think some will end up with Trump. But I think if you haven't been in the cult and you supported Nikki Haley, the idea of voting for Trump is just vomitous. So I don't know. Would they sit out the election? Perhaps. Maybe. But I don't know if 80%, which is the number I always hear thrown around by pundits, I don't think 80% are coming home to Trump. What do you think?
I completely agree. I think if you voted for Nikki Haley, it's because you really didn't want Donald Trump. And I think you're past the point of holding your nose and voting for Donald Trump. It's not to say every, but I think most Nikki Haley voters are not going back to Trump. Now, that said, anything could happen. And I'll tell you this. Migrant crisis is bad, and it's enough. It is turning enough people to Republicans and to Trump to be a problem for Joe Biden. But I think actually most Nikki Haley voters, I think there's a chunk that will vote for Joe Biden, like me, right? That's, I'm in that camp and was last time. But I also think they're looking at these third party candidates. Mm-hmm. And I don't know that we're taking like RFK Jr. seriously enough for those people. Not enough for him to win, but enough for him to maybe be a spoiler. And the question is for whom? I happen to think it's a spoiler for Donald Trump. I think if he's talking about putting someone like Aaron Rodgers on his ticket, mm-hmm. he is appealing to Trump voters.
Well, he had such a great season with the Jets. Why not?
I know. Someone on Twitter was joking, like, don't worry. He's going to get injured the first week of his presidency, and he'll be out for four years.
He might not make it to the convention. The evaluation of Bobby Kennedy Jr., when you look at his policies, when you look at his rhetoric, the thing you said before, and this is the connection I wanted to make. Yes, Biden voters demand more from Joe Biden. Biden voters hold him accountable. Michigan Democrats, 20% of them were uncommitted because they were sending that message. And the reason for that is because, and I'll say this, because Democrats are smart, okay? Democrats are not dumb people, right? They're like, I don't give a fuck about the party. I give a fuck about what's right and what I need and what this country needs. You made the contrast. Is a party versus a cult. So
yeah,
I don't see how most intelligent Democrats who care about racism, who care about anti-Semitism, who care about vaccinations, who care about, you know, just logic. Like,
yeah,
he's not appealing to that side of this country. His policies, his world, his sphere of influence is all revolving around a more of a conservative ideal, an extremist ideal on the right.
I wouldn't call it conservative.
Please, an extremist, an extremist.
Yes.
On the right. Okay. No, I self-corrected on that. A right-wing extremist, yes, landscape that he's traveling through.
Yeah, but we just talked about. So the very smart intellectual Democrats you're talking about, I think you're absolutely right, would never go for an RFK Jr. But there are Democrats who, like we said, really care about the economy and immigration, and they see what's happening in their towns, in their own backyards, their schools. And I think they could be drawn to someone else. And that someone else could be, I mean, we've seen that Trump is getting some Democratic voters to leave the party. I don't think it's because they're stupid. I think it's because they have priorities that they don't think Biden and Democrats are getting.
I don't find it really hard to believe that there are Democrats leaving Biden to go to Trump. Maybe the media found a few somewhere.
We've interviewed people, yeah, who are doing it. It's hard for me to believe too, but we've interviewed people who are doing it. We've got polling. We have exit polling, which is really important, mm-hmm, coming out of these primaries. People who voted for Biden last time and voted for Trump this time.
Have you seen or heard the main motivation from these people as to why they're
immigration and the economy?
But you see, that doesn't make sense to me. When you talk about the economy,
it shouldn't matter, but like, it is mattering to a lot of people.
Well, Democrats, when it comes to immigration, take more of a compassionate, tolerant view.
For sure.
Which to me would make it more likely that they would understand, well, at least Biden's desire in how he's approaching this. His execution may not be the best that it could be. But I don't think anyone can fault him that he wants to be compassionate and accepting of.
But you're talking esoterically and theoretically, and I agree with you. But take New York City, mm-hmm, right? It's a pretty liberal place, mm-hmm, full of smart liberal intellectuals, right? When you're told that your kid has to do remote learning coming off of COVID, because they need your public school to house migrants during a storm, that made New York City parents livid. That's taking an issue out of the esoteric and into the practical. Mm-hmm. And they're thinking, this problem is not solved and Democrats don't have the answer. When you're a liberal Democratic mayor in Denver, Chicago, New York City, Los Angeles, and you're begging Joe Biden to do more.
Mm-hmm.
it's not a theoretical issue. It's not just about compassion. I mean, there are people who want the migrant crisis solved because they have compassion for migrants who are being treated inhumanely because we don't have the resources. We don't have the adjudication. We don't have the judges. We don't have the courts. We don't have the money to deal with all these people. And a lot of Democrats are now saying the Remain in Mexico policy was probably a good one. You know, a lot of Trump stuff was inhumane and awful, but Remain in Mexico was probably smart. Let's deal with adjudicating whether someone should be able to come over as
right,
an asylum
but it was largely due to the pandemic, though. That was a pandemic-era policy. It was very specific. I guess what I'm troubled with is the idea.
No, Trump introduced that right away, and then Biden undid it right away because he wanted to undo Trump's immigration policies right away.
Right.
I get that completely.
Right.
But there are some, you can't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think, I mean, people just can see with their own eyes that this is a crisis and a bad policy.
Sure. And I'm not discounting anything you're saying. I'm taking it to the next step and saying, because I think Democrats are rational, logical, and intellectual, usually, those Democrats that you're talking about may hold their nose, go into the voting booth, and vote for Biden. Why? Because they know the alternative is 1 billion times worse. They're talking about a guy who is bragging that he's going to be a dictator day one. He's going to have mass deportations. He's going to have camps. He's going to ban this group, ban that group. He talked about documenting people. I can't see a Democrat saying, okay, I'm voting for that guy. You know what I mean? Like, that is where it's going to end up. But who knows? I know
That's what you want. I know. And listen, that was the theory of the case in 2020. And Biden was right.
Mm-hmm.
Biden believed that the alternative was so bad that even if Democrats were mad at him or to the left of him, they would still vote for him. That's his theory of the case again.
Mm-hmm.
But we have different conditions now. You know, we're out of a pandemic. We're still dealing with, you know, economic issues and immigration issues that we didn't have then. So what you're predicting is what Biden is hoping happens too.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just telling you what we see from exit polling. Mm-hmm. It's different. It is different this time. We didn't have a single poll in 2020 where Trump was outperforming Biden in a single state. We have several now.
Sure. No, now, I've seen
those
polls.
We can say, I don't believe the polls. Mm-hmm. I don't believe people telling me that they're both leaving Biden and voting for Trump. We can plug our ears and say that.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, and we'll see. You know, we'll see in November. But I'm just telling you, I'm seeing differences this time. As someone's covered this for a long time, I'm seeing differences.
Well, it feels
not sure.
different to me because, and I'm not saying this just because I'm biased because I'm a Democrat, but when you look at the economy and you use the same leading economic indicators we have to judge every administration and the economy for the last bazillion years, the economy is perhaps one of the greatest economies we've had in decades. When you look at the United States, where it is today, overseas, geopolitically, in terms of our executive branch leadership, the strength of NATO, that's better than what it was. I think there's a reality to where the country is today. But at the same time, you have this other guy who, since the last election, was impeached twice, indicted 4 times, 91 felony counts, insurrection. I mean, they are now the same in terms of being nominees, and they're either neck and neck in the polls, or if you believe the polls, Trump is even ahead in some polls. So I'm with you, Essie. Yeah. It is so different now because Biden should be 90%, Trump should be 10%. So that alone is scary to anyone.
But we see that that's not the case.
Right.
And I'm just telling you what we hear and what we see from polls and voters. And believe me, I agree with you. I am aghast at where we are, that Trump is going to perhaps claw his way back into the White House. I can't believe it. And yet this is the reality. And I was saying on the air the other night, like, you know, there's so much displeasure in this election and people are not happy that this is our choice. And I was saying, you know, there's stages of grief and we can be angry. We can be in denial. At some point, we're going to bargain and think about, well, maybe a third party candidate, right? But at some point, you have to accept this is where the country is at. And these are the two major party nominees. And Trump has a very good chance of winning. That's just the reality. And the sooner you accept it, then we can deal with how to prevent that.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a lot of Democratic friends who I think are going to go through this election in denial about just how well Trump is doing. I'm not saying that's you, but you're sounding a little like them. And as your grief counselor,
my predictions have been known to be off before. And I will take a referral for a grief counselor offline, for sure.
I will be your grief counselor, but the sooner we get to the reality and accept that this is better or worse, and we think worse, this is where people are, the sooner we can think about how to keep that from happening, mm-hmm. and some of the factors that, could prevent that.
Yeah, I don't negate any of that. And I do think it is incredibly alarming where we are today. That said, and I say this all the time, to me, it's all about math. Trump did not win in 2020. He did not win before insurrection, before indictments. I mean, I think by the end of April, he's going to be a convicted felon in New York. Okay, so that's going to be domino number one. Before being adjudicated in court as a fraud, as a rapist, before all of that. Okay. In order to win this time, he needs more voters than he had last time. And from everything I can see, it just seems like he's lost a lot of voters. And I see Biden's voters, again, next November, when that binary choice, those two items on the menu, smack them in the face, they will hold their nose, Democrats, and make the better choice. Whereas Trump, whether it's the new Republican voters against Trump, those that ad, like we see there's a lot of Trump voters who are just like, I can't do this guy again. So from a mathematical standpoint, how does he tip the scales so that this time he wins?
Well, that goes back to what we talked about in the beginning. He has to grow his base, and he's not all that interested in doing that. Right. Now, there are smart people around him who are and who realize that is the name of the game. He didn't have enough MAGAs to win in 2020, and he can't win with just MAGAs. Mm-hmm. And the smart thing to do would have been to say, Nikki Haley voters, come back home. You can't vote for Joe Biden. You have to, come back home to me. And instead, he bragged about kicking them out. Mm-hmm. And he's kicked out good conservatives, both in Congress and in terms of voters. He's lost a lot of suburban women. Mm-hmm. Republicans will continue to lose suburban women as they double down on abortion and reproductive rights issues. Mm-hmm. That's just not where most people are. But the polls do show Biden's losses. And so, whether you want to believe that those people will stay home or go to Trump, or ultimately, like you say, hold their nose and vote for Biden, that is what this will come down to.
Right.
Those people, the people disaffected, disillusioned with Biden, and are there enough people that Trump can pull in?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the voters we're fighting over now. It's not, Trump's got his MAGA wing, Biden's got his Democrats. Mm-hmm. It's all these other people that they have to fight over now. And meanwhile, deal with third party candidates who are also fighting for those voters. So it's messy. This election's going to be messy. And I was on with someone the other night as we were sort of counting the delegates and saying, well, it's over. And there's not going to be a lot of drama to cover from now to November. And he was saying, I don't know how this is going to end. Are you serious? Like, there's a lot of drama because this could go either way. It's just not clear yet. It's going to be a very messy fight for those voters.
It's going to be a ton of drama. I can't imagine anyone would think there's not going to be any drama. Well, I'm going to end our conversation with how you started your piece when you say that Biden and Trump are now the nominees. You say, congrats, America.
Question mark? Congrats, America? Question mark?
Yeah, question mark.
We did it? We did it?
Right.
Yay?
This is the best that America has. It's an odd place to think that... that America's two nominees of our two major parties are, again, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. When the talent pool out there is so much richer.
Yes.
So
I think it says a lot about us and our broken political system and our broken two-party system. I think it says a lot about how broken politics is.
Yeah. Well, we'll leave it on that note, and we'll have you back again soon to update us on the new polls and the new drama and the new Trump this and the new Biden that, because the next 8 months in this country are going to be totally cray-cray.
Wild. Yeah. We'll get through it together, though.
Of course. And that grief counselor, just keep that grief counselor nearby.
Got it. I've got you.
All righty. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. This episode of The Back Room was edited and produced by me, Andy Ostroy. It was co-edited and co-produced by Maddie Rosenberg and co-produced by Jen Hammoud. Our theme song was composed by Andrew Hollander, and our logo was designed by Cricket Langell. And special thanks to Patricia Wind. Please take a moment to rate and review the podcast, and also follow or subscribe. Until next time, keep your eyes on Washington, Hollywood, and your own backyards, and have a great week.